the day you pay it, you're done paying it. And to go back to what you were asking, I don't have the number off the top of my head, but about 15% of what you pay in your property tax goes to the city. I believe that's a fairly current number. And of that, plus sales tax, which is a significant contributor, and the NO tax, which is also substantial, you don't pay those as a homeowner. The largest expense center in that pool of money is the police department. So it, it's probably disproportionately larger in police than your instinct would tell you right off the top of your head.
I see. So you're saying that the amount of tax we pay to the city, if you include the presumption that we're buying things in land as a productive local member of the community, you're saying that the majority of the money we pay in taxes probably winds up going to the police because the police is a very large part of our total budget?
Not the majority, but the largest share.
It's the largest. It's got to clear out the
money. Right, not 51%, but the largest share.
Mr.
Hill, you have a question?
Yes.
Is that okay? My question is, do these new projects, say, out towards Semyon along the parkway there, and the new project behind the building center, that new area, do they have these impact fees?
No, because they're not subject to the developer agreement, so they don't have a contractual arrangement with the city that establishes and requires it.
And when the, when these contracts were acquired, this was acquired way back, right? Before the owners that own them now?
That's right. They were
so
purchased
they acquired
with those in place.
So I just think we should do everything we can to enhance developers to come in to get things going around here. And if, you know, it, to me, it's like we're putting a penalty on them, you know? I mean, I believe the city needs to sit down and compromise some way in this thing, because I don't know how you can just pick a corner and say, okay, and yes, it was written, but we can unwrite it too and make it right. We need these people in this town if we want it to grow. We don't want to be deterrents. We want to be encouragements. And I believe that if you say these guys don't have to do it, these guys have to do it, it's, I don't know. I just think or maybe you could work with the developer and say, hey, you know, it's going to cost you this. We can work with you. Maybe, I don't know, but maybe there's a piece of land here we can help you with or something, but we don't want to come to a stall point where they won't do it, we won't, and it just sits here. That's what's been going on for how long? I believe with all the people that are going to move up into this area, we'll get it back tenfold. We just won't get it at first. We need to stick our necks out somewhat.
I appreciate your position. I'm just reporting on this contract exists and it calls for doing something to establish a fee. Yeah, Mr.
So, a few questions. This is an action item for tonight.
It is an action item tonight. So debate on it should wait until then. This is really just informational.
How many units are we potentially talking about here over the next however many years?
Between the two subdivisions, it's roughly 1,400.
Okay. Yeah, I'll wait for my debate until we get that.
Mr. Lopez.
Yeah, just had a quick question. If the developer has the single family, what about the duplex, triplex, quadplex? Is it 803 per unit?
803 per unit, yes, sir. So a duplex would pay it twice.
And a fourplex
would pay it four times.
About 3,200. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Jones, you seem to suggest that there was a relationship in the original agreements that were negotiated with the developers between the density of the properties and the fee that was being assessed. And I'm not sure I quite understood that, but it was something that you said previously, and I was wondering if you could elaborate on that a little bit more.
Sure, probably what you were picking up on was that at the time there were 99 dwelling units in the area, and they determined if we were to correlate out based upon the size of the East Lane area, and if that were added into the city based upon how many units we have total in the city, that would result in a total impact to this area of this much. or total cost of service in this area adds this much, and they just use that number to fit back into a per unit fee. So it was, there was no fee collected to the people who lived there then, it's only for the additional ones.
But you're not saying that the city has no ability to adjust the density based on, say, for example, you looked at the wetlands and realized that you needed to make some sort of adjustments and you needed to adjust your density.
Yes, ma'am.
And so are you saying that there's a link between the density that you have and the ability to pay this fee? That's what it sounded like you were saying, and I wanted to get clear.
No, my apologies. So that was just an example of the kind of thing that's included in the developer's agreement, is different responsibilities of either party. The city has basically guaranteed until different date, 2025 for one project and 2030 for another, that we will maintain a density of a minimum of at least 4 dwelling units per acre. And that doesn't discount the ability to, for example, have critical areas regulations or things like that, but for developable land. So it was just an example of, whereas we have responsibilities like keeping the zoning in place, they also have some responsibilities like paying the fee.
Great.
When
they
don't. Okay, thank you. I'd like to, I don't know if we move, but I'd like to ask that we, unless we have pressing questions that we have to get done now, we just table this until the meeting, because we're running behind on time.
Yeah, we are. I didn't see the clock. Sorry. We'll go ahead.
Is that okay with everybody?
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Good evening, Council. So we're going to take a quick recess. We just were calling that our virtual cut.
Okay.
I was looking up there. Our the sound for the virtual meeting just cut out, or we're just informing cut out. So we need to pause for a little bit. IT is on their way, but unfortunately she was pretty close by. Should be able to figure out probably pretty quick. Sorry for all of this, but you need to recess the meeting.
Set up to continue the study session. So, Mr. Nieberling, would you like to?
Honestly, it's a
problem. I think I'm bumped. Am I
bumped? So, Dan, would you need more than 10 minutes? Okay, we're going to let Mr. Heverling go, and then we're going to skip the hearing examiner with your recommendation. Because Ms. Pratcher and I covered that during the regular meeting. The Planning Commission applicant is here, so we'd like to not inconvenience.
Yeah.
Just off.
Oh.
Is that little computer over there?
Dan Heverman, the finance director, City of Blaine. So, thank you, council members. It's nice to be back and bring you here. So, this should go fairly quick. I have presented already to the finance committee last year about financing options with East Blaine. I'll do a real fast recap just for the brand new council members and those that haven't heard this. So, this is dealing with the sewer fix that needs to be happening in East Blaine. There's numerous cracks and some pipes. So we need to do about $6 to $7 million to fix these cracks in the sewer pipes. The largest portion of financing this project is going to be a loan. We also have some other revenue sources, but the biggest portion of this will be a loan. That's going to be borrowing somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 to $6 million. We don't know exactly, but it'll be somewhere in that area. So last year I presented to the finance committee different options that we had, such as public works trust fund loans, a traditional bond, and then the other two options were two different private financing type of options. So this presentation tonight, which will be quick, and then if you have some questions, I'll answer the questions, is talking about two different private financing options, which seem to be the areas that the finance committee was leaning towards, and it's one of these options or what the city is recommending to go with. So the agenda for this, all we have the presentation that I put in front of you, is the debt conversation for financing East Plains Sewer Project. So the very first option is with Holmes Capital, it's a private financing firm out of California, but they do business in Washington State, and they provide loans to government agencies. So this is assuming an interest rate, it's going to be around 3.1%. That could change, but it'll be somewhere around that amount. Over 10 years, it would be $821,382 that would be borrowed if $5 million was the amount that we went out for. So that's the interest that we pay over those 10 years is $821,000. This is just for comparison's sake, so you can see the two different options. This option is extremely flexible, which is why we actually prefer this one the most. It's very easy to change the borrowing amount. There's no fees on it. There's just the 3.1%. So, you know, if we get out later and we need even more, we can easily change this amount and make it $6 million or $5.5 million. So that is a huge plus with this, is how flexible it is. Another big area that's an extremely huge plus for us is there's significantly less paperwork. A lot less staff time and costs involved, which that can add up. If you go through a traditional bond, which is a route that can be taken, that can be presented to the finance committee, traditional bonds can take about 4 to 5 months. It's an extremely intense process. You can't change the amount. You'd have to start all over again if you wanted to change the amount of the bond. So that was the first option with Holmes Capital. The second option is also a private financing type of an option. However, it's kind of moving towards a bit like a traditional bond. This would be through our bonding agency, D.A. Davidson. They would be taking our amount that we want to borrow and farm it out to a couple of different local banks. And then they would go to D.A. Davidson and bid on whether they want our bond. So it's not a traditional bond, but it's somewhat similar. The interest rate on that would probably be somewhere around 2.3%, so it is less. And if we were borrowing $5 million, it would be about $601,000. You can see between those, and that's the interest over 10 years. You can see the difference between those two is about $221,000 over 10 years. However, with that, it's not flexible with the borrowing amount. So if there was a need that we needed more money, we'd have to start all over again. So we can't just change it. We have to start the process from the beginning. Versus the first one, we can change it. Nothing stops. It just continues forward. It also has some upfront fees. Not exactly sure what those are until we get into the process. It would probably be somewhere around $30,000. So that would have to be taken into consideration. The first one, there is no fees. Much more paperwork involved with that. So it's more rigorous, not as much as a traditional bond, but there is more than the first option with Holman Capital. There would be more staff time and more costs involved, which goes into that opportunity cost and kind of eats up that interest savings. Well, so it wouldn't be quite as much of a savings because of the staff time involved and the cost of that. So that's just a real quick presentation on those two different options. And the goal of later tonight when we get into the meeting is with your council action is just basically giving us a little bit more of a firm idea of which way you want to go. So then we can continue forward with one of these two options and then later present the actual financing paperwork, which we get passed by council. So after that, is there any questions?
Yeah, I just had a quick question. With the flexibility, the Holman's proposal, does this act more like an RCL, like revolving credit line, than a traditional loan?
Yes. That's one of the huge benefits of this. It's basically like a credit line. So if we needed to, so later if there was something we needed to do with water instead of sewer, we could actually just tack it onto the same thing and borrow even more. So it's extremely flexible.
And if they indicated how much more, example, a discovery of a bigger issue, how much more would we kind of be pre-approved for?
Oh, with them, we probably could be pre-approved up to $15 million. It didn't seem like it was, like there was any problems at all with us getting more funds for him than we talked to him. Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Yes.
I believe inflation is going to hit here pretty soon, and I think, in my perspective on the whole crew, well got their hands full anyways, and these guys don't need another job to do, where in 5 years from now, I don't believe we'll ever have an opportunity to get this kind of money. It's gonna, I believe inflation is gonna go through the roof, so it's our time to act. I think option one would be a lot better, because it'll take the heat off our staff, which our staff is gonna be very busy doing other things. And just the amount of money saved there, but if you look over all the stuff that it may have to consist of, and I'd like to talk a little more about this, but I believe that doing it this way and listening to our finance director, listen to these guys, that's why we're paying them. This is their recommendation. That doesn't mean I follow what they say, but that looks pretty good to me. I can see the whole picture here that we keep kicking the can down the road. I know we're going to get financing one way or another. I know it's $200,000 more, but I honestly believe that's probably peanuts compared to what we're going to gain from the growth.
$200,000 spread over 10 years is, you know, $20,000 a year out of flexibility.
I just want to point one quick thing. I just wanted to mention that city manager, Mr. Jones, was wanting me to make sure I say that one other big, huge plus of this, which is why we like to go with the first option of the flexibility, is we need to move fast on this, because we have a request in with the county to try and get $2.5 million. So if something were to happen and the county didn't give us that request, then we can immediately tack this on to the first one and borrow more. So that's why the first one, that flexibility is huge, because we can immediately change things based on our request with the county, the $2.5 million.
I think that last statement may render my question moot. I was wondering, you brought us two proposals, but I'm not sure what the solicitation process is. If you send out a request for proposal, why are there two proposals that are being brought to us? How does the process work? That why are there not three or five choices that we're being presented with?
So essentially, I'm the one that goes through the different options and decides. I don't put out a request for proposal for people. I go to the different options of routes that we can go. One of them is Public Works Trust Fund loan, but that's very limited time frame. It's a window that you can get in and apply for. It's only during certain times of the year. I believe it starts in May, and then they end up awarding sometime in August or September. So that's an option, but it's ruled out at this point. That is one that I did present to the Finance Committee in, I think it was October of last year. And then the other options are the two here, two different private financing types of options. And then the final one would be the traditional bond. So that's a very, like I was saying, a very rigorous process. The rates are lower, but it's like it'd probably be 2.2% locked in for 20 years. However, it takes about 5 months, and it's considerable amount of staff time. And that time adds up fast. The staff involved, and it could be $50,000 to $100,000 of staff time, and just all the time we're putting into creating that package. So these are just the two routes that the Finance Committee was leaning towards when we presented this last year. So it's kind of a carryover from the conversation that I already started in last year. Any other questions?
I think if there are no further questions at this time, people can ask further questions when this is brought forward during the meeting. It's time to go on to the Planning Commission candidate interview. So I believe candidates here, Mr. Goetz. Larry, first of all, please come to the microphone there. What we normally do in this circumstance, we understand you have received these questions. So we'll just go through them one by one and ask you, and just we're running a bit short of time, so if you could make short replies, please.
Okay.
So we will start asking questions. Richard, do you have the questions?
No, can you...
Okay, so I have the questions printed in front of me, so I will just ask them for you, and then you can reply, and at the end, if there are any more questions, or if you have questions, okay? So please take a moment to tell us about yourself and why you want to serve on the Planning Commission.
I'm a fairly new resident of Lane, just barely a year and a half now. Moved here the end of last May, 2 days ago. I'm, like I guess a lot of people, come up from California. I worked for the city of Los Angeles for 32 years in their water and power department in the water side, and left as a senior water mechanic. And have been doing some volunteering already for Forest Service, and I've been outside all my life. I've been here twice, you know, and since the Boy Scouts took me out when I was, you know, yay high, like hiking and stuff like that, so it's kind of a natural thing to come here, you know. We were kind of burned out with LA, like a lot of people, and so here I am.
Okay. Please describe your understanding of the Washington State Growth Management Act and how the Act's goals are implemented by local jurisdictions.
In reading the synopsis that I found online, it seems like, you know, I'm not sure, having grown up in or read the newspaper all my life in Los Angeles, sounds like Washington got a little bit of jump on that, this whole kind of thinking. I guess this was enacted like 1995 or something like that. And just, it's just an overall thing that they want everybody involved. We want people, planning commissions, either on the county or the city level, especially to be working together with one common vision instead of everybody kind of going this way or that, looking at, you know, how the impact would be on certain jurisdictions, on siting of different facilities, you know, more, you know, like tenuous ones, like transfer stations, sewers transfer stations and stuff like that. And just a kind of, and it was, seemed to be, a regulation or a law or whatever you want to call it, it was just a little bit ahead of its time. And so it's, you know, wants you to take a step-by-step, you know, look into what needs to be set up for planning instead of just hopefully not a narrow vision of how it's, what you guys need. You need a little bit more broad view.
Okay. I think you've sort of answered question three, was do you have any experience with any community or volunteer committees? If so, what was your role? Do you have anything further to add to what you already said?
No, I mean, over the years, I've volunteered for Habitat for Humanity and did, you know, some my background with Boy Scouts and stuff like that. Did some work with them and stuff like that. But just here and there, you know, Sierra Club and stuff like that. So.
Okay. The Planning Commission's responsibility per state law, RCW 3670040, is to assist the planning department in carrying out its duties. The department's duty is to fulfill the legislative and policy priorities of the City Council. Describe how you would apply your skills in helping the department fulfill its responsibility.
Having not a specific planning, you know, part for, I think I would be mostly just be willing to do whatever you guys needed me to do. In my years with Water and Power, I, you know, led workers, crews of workers, and handled all job planning, you know, layout, you know, coordination between the different, you know, groups in the city, and who I needed for this job, who I needed for that job, when I needed them. You know, just planning, make sure I had everybody there when I needed them. And, you know, it all just kind of folds into, you know, in place anyway.
Okay. The Planning Commission is responsible for making recommendations to council on proposed land use legislation, both municipal code text amendments and comprehensive plan text amendments. Describe your experience in helping write and review regulations and policies.
I won't say I've had a lot of experience in writing regulations. I've had a lot of experience in reading regulations and interpreting regulations as far as, code, I was a waterworks mechanic, so anything to do with, filtration plants, filter plants, something like that. So we were always either coordination between us and our engineers as to what, they pretty much would give it, say, okay, this is what's needed to be done, but we still have to kind of sometimes finesse it. So that might be my one.
Okay. The time commitment for a planning commissioner ranges from 3 hours in a light month to 8 hours in a busy month. This does not include the time spent preparing for the meetings. Are you committed to volunteering that amount of time?
Yes.
Okay. Let me just say before there are any more questions that we as a council really appreciate our citizens who volunteer to be on our committees, because without you, we cannot proceed. So we are in debt to you immensely. So thank you for coming here and for applying for this position. So I will ask any of the other council members if they have any questions for you. Okay, hearing none, do you have any questions for us?
No. I mean, we'll see what happens. So.
Okay.
No problem, one way or another.
Thank you very much, Mr. Getz, for coming and applying for this position. I think that's the end of the study session, so we will close the study session at 17:58.